All right, I don't actually even need 5 minutes. In case you didn't get my train wreck of an impromptu talk slash discussion before, my name is David Medley. I've previously been a GNOME maintainer, and I've previously put through release cycles, and they're, you know, a little bit hairy. But this year, I've been roped into coordinating the release notes for the release. People think release notes, big deal, but it turns out that the release notes are actually kind of important to the whole release process, because the release notes are the blingy thing that a lot of people look at rather than actually installing the software. This means both new users who are perhaps thinking about trying it out and the technical press. Most technical press won't actually ever bother to run GNOME. They'll just cough up your release notes with slightly different text on the same pictures. Because they really lack creativity. So the release notes turned out to be really important. A couple of releases ago, there was no real coordinator, and to put it politely, they were not very good. To put it less politely, they were really bad. So we're now alternating turns on a round robin to make sure there's a coordinator. But you still need people actually to do the work. So kind of what I was hoping to do was tell some people, if you really want to get involved and you think, hey man, I need something really easy, here's a good way to get involved, is to help on the release notes drive. So what it involves is basically getting yourself a GNOME dev build, either from GNOME or GHBuild or Ubuntu, whatever it's Heron, is that the right name? Or GNOME Developer Kit, which I've not actually played with yet. Okay, so that's actually a really good solution. I knew there was some foresight stuff, but grab yourself a build of GNOME 2.21 point whatever, and start writing down all the new stuff. You don't need to be able to write. If you can just make dot points, you actually I've done most of the work, because the hardest part of writing the release notes is working what you need to write about. people should feel free to get involved. This is the wiki page up here, live.gnome.org/2.21/release notes. You can find that from the front page if you just type release notes into the search box. People who want to write, people who want to do screenshotting, all that, put your name down. Otherwise, just shove stuff in, get a test build, and yeah, go crazy. I really want your help. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I didn't even get to make a silly sound denoting the 4 minute point. Rock on. You need the video?
Yeah, I do. That'd be good.
While David was speaking, we had another addition to the Lightning Talks page. You can add more to the Lightning Talks page as we go through. We'll get to you towards the end. Keep adding more. So, now, ready to go? Cool. Josh is going to talk about diving into rapid GNOME development.
All right. I'm Josh. I'm a long-time GNOME user and an equally long-time GNOME developer wannabe. So, this actually leads in well from the last talk, because I'm going to show you how to dive into GNOME development with the GNOME Developer Kit. Currently, developing for GNOME becomes a bit of a hassle. If you find a bug or a patch or a feature you want to write, it's quite difficult to just download the trunk, compile and use it, because all the trunk libraries are using a different version. All the trunk software is using different versions of libraries that might not be compatible with what you currently have installed. So there are options like GHBuild and a few other things, but they tend to have the similar problem of incompatibilities. I've never actually had GHBuild work for me. There seems to be bugs in the code that won't compile. But to solve that problem, what we do is we use GNOME Developer Kit. Ta-da. They don't have a real website. So the GNOME Developer Kit is based off Foresight Linux, which is a binary-based distribution, which means we can really get the libraries very fast. Foresight Linux is developed by RPath, which has the Connery Package Manager. And the great thing about Connery is that it has a built-in version control. So this means that we can very quickly build our applications from the trunk source, from GNOME's SVN, against libraries that also have been previously built by our builder. And I'm going to very quickly show you how to do that, if my computer will work for me. Ignore this, please. This is a virtual machine running on 512 RAM. Don't do it. Excuse this. Okay, sorry about that. So the first thing that we do is that we have a little shell script that will help you set up the GNOME building part, which is actually called setup build environment. And this asks you for your name, so I'm Josh, an email address, enter your proper one, and it will set up all the folders that you need for this. So what that has done is it's given us a GNOME chunk to work with, a build repository, and a cache directory. And if we jump over to the GNOME trunk, the first thing we do is, I'm just going to pin this here. Does this work? Nope, never mind. The first thing we do is we check out a module. So for this example, we're going to work with Empathy. Yep, I changed my name, it's mine, because I actually already have Empathy checked out to speed up this. So what this means is we've got Connery version control checking out the cheese application. And so once it does that, which doesn't take too long normally, we end up with a directory that has a recipe in it. And now this is really where Connery comes into its power, because if we take a look at the recipe in cheese, it will tell Connery where to build cheese from. So it's a Python file, as you can see, and it just has some details that we can basically ignore. But the really useful part is that we can add in a simple variable called patches. And this here allows us to do a comma-separated list of patches that are on the system. So we could have a patch that we made against a trunk, put it in here, and away we go. We just hit the compile button, which is another Connery command, which is CVC cook, because it's a recipe, we're cooking it, and then it will cook the file for us, and then we install it to the file system, which is pretty straightforward. But the best thing about the patches list is that we can actually include patches that aren't locally stored. So that means we can type in a URL to a patch on Bugzilla, just by typing the HTTP address. So this makes it really easy and really fast to test patches against the trunk version of GNOME SVN, and then we can go back to Bugzilla and say, yep, this patch is good. Unfortunately, I'm running out of time, but if you want to see me later, I can show you how easy it is to make a patch yourself and apply the patch and then test it and submit the patch back to Bugzilla. I'm going to talk slowly, so see me later. Thank you.
And now, James, to talk about roads.
That's James.
Do you need your laptop?
No, because I forgot my connecty thingy.
Do you need a page or something?
No, it's pretty good.
Restart my time.
Okay. Cool. So at Sydney Linux User Group, a couple of months ago, we had this open, like a open day kind of thing for non-geeks, and we showed them about open source and Linux. And I met this guy there and went, hey, he was a Mac user, and he goes, hey, is there anything like AppleScript for Linux? And I said, well, no. And then I spoke to Jeff, and I'm like, Jeff, is anyone doing anything like that? And Jeff's like, no. And so I went and investigated if we could actually do this or not. So I come up with this little idea called Rhodes. I actually have code for it. So basically what it is, it's an embedded JavaScript language within GNOME that you can use to customize and automate different GNOME applications. Currently it's very, very broken and in a really early stage, but what I'm looking for is some contributors to go ahead and like give me a hand with it. So what I've implemented so far is I've chosen to... Okay, so I had a look at how AppleScript works, and AppleScript has this tiny little embedded language that you can use to like talk to, say, I know, Rhythmbox, so you can like, you know, add a media file, play that media file, stop, you know, raise the volume, lower the volume, it's all those kind of little operations like that. And I said, okay, well, I'll go ahead and implement something like that. And one of the things that I went ahead and implemented was this little dbus interface in Python that you can kind of talk to via JavaScript. It's a bit complex to explain in a lightning talk, but it's coming around real good, and I'd like some people to give who might have some input on it to give me a hand. But yeah, that's all. If you look on the Lightning Talks page, I've actually got a Bazaar repository, and you can just Bazaar clone that, and if you want to have a chat to me about it, come and see me. That's it.
Gosh, we didn't even get to our end of our timer there. Awesome new stuff in the graphics world. Pascal. Okay. Your 5 minutes began 2 seconds ago. No, I won't be that cruel. Do you need a web page or anything? Okay. Ready to go?
Yeah, pretty much. I just want to give a quick rundown on what's happening in the open source graphic world. In your case, any of you might have seen Inkscape 0.45.1 is out. This has been out for a while, and 0.46 should be out soon. There are pre-release alpha packages available, and there's a bunch of repositories for Gutsy and Hardy. Just go to the Inkscape.org website, and you can do alpha testing, and that would help, and would be sincerely appreciated if you could report bugs. GIMP 2.4 was released, and with it, the website was revamped, so it's really, really sexy now. It looks really awesome. Current release is 2.4.3. Has a lot of really cool features that have been sort of in the can for a while. It uses the new icon set from the Art Libre set, so they're all Tango styled. You've got scalable brushes, which would be really, which is really awesome for painters on the fly to change brush sizes. There's a revamp for the selection tools. There's an improvement in zooming, so zooming in, zooming out, quality and rendering speed. There's been a few menu changes, so it's a bit more usable, hopefully. Changes in the align tool, so you can now align objects in a row quite quickly, so if you're doing diagrams or something like that. There's more file format support, most important of which is Photoshop ABR brushes, and you can now do layer masks in Photoshop PSD files. There's also color profile management to some degree. Perspective clone, which is kind of too hard and too annoying to try and explain in this quick. Just check it out on the features on the release notes. What else is there? Red eye removal, which is, yeah, I guess, kind of really handy if you're not already using F-Spot to do it. And new and improved printing dialogue, which is actually had a look at. That's actually kind of cool. Otherwise, the Open Movie Project, the next one, is already sort of in production, called Peach. Go to peach.blender.org. So this one actually has a plot for a change. apparently goes for a bit longer, and they have a development blog, which is actually really quite interesting. And the next thing that's actually that sort of ties in with that is there's an open game being made based on it called Apricot, apricot.blender.org. It's full 3D, and it should be really cool too. On that note, Blender 2.45 is out. Otherwise, the other things that are happening is currently we've got 2,775 icons in the GNOME icon theme, with more being added, so Git is coming along quite well. And if you weren't really, or if you're not really hooked into the newswire, GDK plus stock icons, almost all by now have been done. They were all done in one day in March last year, 199 icons in one day. So yeah, which is kind of cool. So things are moving on pretty well. That's about it.
Rock on.
Oh yeah, if you want to check out the websites, they're Inkscape.org for Inkscape, GIMP.org, Blender.org, and they should be on GNOME.org pages to the GNOME icon theme and everything else. That's about it, really.
Okay, text layout, which is apparently like this. Although it's 404.
Oh, hang on. If you want to refresh that, that should be. That's letting me commit that. I'll go back to that page and then I'll just fix that thing.
This one?
Oh!
If you fix the link, I'll grab my drink.
Okay. So. I'm just here to tell you a little bit about some stuff that we've been working on.
Hold on, I'll have to start you off on your timer first.
Now right. You make it.
Yeah, okay. So we've just been working on changing how trying to provide stuff where you can lay out text and stuff that looks nice. This is, so what have we been working on? We've been working on optimal line breaking and making that work with text that has, you know, different heights and stuff, which tech doesn't. So everyone respects LaTeX line breaking and stuff, optimal line breaking. But it only works a paragraph at a time, whereas these days computers are fast enough that we can do things page at a time. So the relevance of that is that you can improve your line breaks, sorry, your page breaks at the end of things and so on. So another thing we've done is stuff to do with, so let's say we have these pictures like this. So you've got a block of text and you have some picture and stuff and you want the text to exactly fit in the space that's available. So you're just changing the size of this picture to fill up that, so that the text runs to the bottom of the available space. And that's useful for a lot of like advertising stuff, that sort of stuff. And an interesting thing about advertising stuff is that it's lucrative, so that gives some way perhaps for money to be channeled into free software development in order to get features that we want and stuff. So the point of me coming here is just to tell you that we have this stuff and to encourage people to if you're working on text stuff, whether it's whether you want to do stuff within Inkscape or a desktop publishing thing or a word processing stuff, then to talk to us. So I suppose the contact place, we might as well just say from the live.gnome.org thing, and I'll fix up a page to think. That's all I wanted to say. Anyone want to questions or anything?
You can have time for questions.
Yes. So we'd, there is a choice of things that Pango does at least allow. So we have proper line breaking. If you're French, then you'll appreciate that, or any language other than English, really. And it gets good font substitution for different scripts and that sort of thing. So Pango's good, yeah. It's a good question. In that Pango, we want to be fairly self-contained. I suppose the right thing is that you have an extra library that you can use in addition to Pango, so that things that need to be small don't need to have the code to do fancy stuff. Okay.
Cool.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Gloss. Josh?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome. Are you ready to rock? Do you need a web page up or anything like that?
No, okay. My laptop
does. Well, pass it over and I'll restart the clock. You're ready to go.
Thank you very much. Just hold it. This will be a very, very brief lightning talk. I'm actually cheating because I gave a lightning talk at the multimedia conference this yesterday as well. Basically, I'm just trying to get a little bit of interest and maybe some extra hands in a project that I'm working on called Gloss. It's an alternative Myth TV front-end system that's written using Python and Clutter. Hopefully, some of you might have got excited by the Clutter talk that you saw from Rob earlier. It's not designed to replace the existing Myth front end because that's an incredible piece of work. It's very stable, it's very mature, and this is not meant to design to replace it in any way. What it is meant to be, though, is an alternative for other people who just want something a little bit shinier than the existing Myth front end, which a lot of people sort of says is getting a little bit dated. After following the Myth TV list for a little while, I saw like there's a phenomenal amount of bitching, I guess you'd say, on there from first timers saying, geez, doesn't the Myth front end look dated compared to Front Row and things like that. What I really wanted to focus on when I started writing Gloss is absolute simplicity, and that's simplicity for both the user who's running it and a developer who might want to come in. It's not designed to have all the configuration options that the current Myth front end does. It's designed to, you know, look this way. It's certainly got theming and things like that, but you don't get a million and one options for the user to confuse the user, if nothing else. From the developer side, it's written in Python to be as absolutely as simple as possible. The modules are all very pluggable, and they're obviously all written in Python as well. You can create transitions in Clutter very, very simply, and the transitions are also pluggable. So you can just drop them in the right directory, and then your theme builders can go off and use them straight away. The theming is done in XML, and again, is very, very simple to use and to write a new theme and things like that. So I guess I'm just putting a call out there to anyone who's interested in having maybe a little side project that I can promise you will be really simple. If you've got a picture in your head of what you want a media center to look like or what you want Myth to look like, maybe you've got some mock-ups, I'd love to speak to you. If you're a GStreamer person who's done much pipeline type GStreamer stuff in Python, I'd love to talk to you as well. And if you know anything about the intricacies of the Myth TV back-end, front-end protocol, I'd also really love to talk to you. If you search for Gloss Myth TV, you'll find the project website and my email address. Thank you.
Can anyone see an X-Hacker nearby? Maybe if they're near you, just punch one of them. Exactly the same thing that happened to Rob just had happened to me. It just decides that I don't want to do VGA anymore, and then...
Clearly it's the university's fault. Do you feel like...
I don't know. I prefer to blame that than X, because it's not been a problem for me before. Is Rob still here?
Yeah,
Are you running a newish X? You're not running Hardy, are you?
No, that's it, right.
Lines aside,
there's an option
in Contrasify
help, but
you'll have to restart that, so fine. Well, I just did that.
Do it again. Okay, what's that option then? It's in the device search. Put option, no frame buffer.
No frame buffer compression.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, build the next desktop. In device?
Yes.
What, like frame buffer no or no frame buffer?
No.
No frame buffer compression.
That true?
Build frame buffer compression. Yeah. Or...
You're not helping. That is fine.
Okay.
You're making us all look like amateurs.
No, that's probably cheating. We'll be back to your regularly scheduled programming in moments. And if not, Daniel gets it. maybe I should quit. Yeah, probably not. No, it's the screen flickers as if it's getting signal, but that's it. The screen flickers as if it's getting it's actually doing something.
Some application has closed the configuration here. Note that it claims.
Hey, knock that off.
The VPA works, the projector works.
Yeah. It's done for a while.
I'm back after like 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
I was really timing my clock. It took a little longer.
What am I doing wrong?
You're fine.
Commander,
VGA doesn't have 1280x8.
Oh, okay.
So VGA.
Yeah.
You could just say
but it does claim to be at that.
Alright, look, I'll load up the web page and we'll keep going there. No worries. Oh, except I have to do my presentation. I'll reboot it.
Weird. You got friend up with the question turned off?
I just didn't get it.
Yeah. Do you want another screen projected on?
If you want. Keystone Application Framework. Jacob. Calling Jacob. He's here. I'll reboot while he's doing his talk. Rock and roll, are you ready to go?
Yes.
We can plug you in?
Sure.
I'm just going to reboot because I need to present.
Yeah.
Is that weird?
Yes.
I've got your problem.
It's advertising 2 months.
Party, so I'm asking for it.
If there are any signal.
But it happened with Sid as well. Is it in any which?
Is there signal coming on the output?
No.
No.
Not at the moment?
It's there. Yeah. Right, I haven't used this. Yeah. It's Debian.
Yeah,
extender. Do you have just a little button here? LCD VGA?
Aha.
That should do it.
Right.
Maybe? You might have to run without. It doesn't recognize the coverage, so I think we just have to run without. I think you have to run without.
All right, I'll do that. Sure.
Yeah, hello. My name's Jacob. I'm introducing a new project here. Unfortunately, my laptop has decided not to output, but if I spin that around, at least I'll have more than nothing. Keystone Framework is a cross-platform application framework for developing software under the environments of Win32 and Linux. In a nutshell, it's an abstraction layer from the operating system, so you write the application once and it will run on both platforms. Some of the facilities included in this as well is, for one, the major is the support for persistent storage in XML. So you define an object tree inside your application and you say persist this and it goes out to XML and you can then load it back. On top of that is also built an implementation of SVG, Scalable Vector Graphics. So fortunately it's not on the screen, but here we go. Document structure on the left here and the actual contents on the screen. And so yeah, there's two major applications for this work so far. One of them is a hobbyist project of mine, which is some audio and music software. The second is a visualization package for the company which I'm employed, who's been a sponsor of this work. And that company is involved in SCADA engineering. So we're doing basically engineering diagrams, being able to actually construct those. There's a drawing and editing package where the end users can actually build up diagrams of a substation and so forth, animate them onto data and show it all up. What else? Also, there is an implementation, at least partially, of the XUL user interface standard. So you can mix the content. You can actually put SVG and XUL on the same screen. And one of the really neat benefits with that is, of course, XUL has geometry management. So rather than actually just sort of saying physical element or display element is going to go in this position at this point, you actually put things inside containers and they all scale and stretch for you, and it's really convenient. Other things about the framework, it's very light and agile. I'm the sole developer on it, therefore I've been able to keep it very tight. The distribution is still, I think, under a megabyte. The memory footprint as well, very low. And so this makes it really good for running in small devices and tight environments. So for example, one thing that we want to be doing a lot more in the future is display for tablets and embedded devices and that sort of thing. Also, what was quite important about keeping it small and tight is that my hobbyist project involves real-time audio signal processing. And so I want as little overhead as possible in actually building a framework that's going to facilitate me doing this. One minute. Okay, what else can I say? There is a published, the framework itself is published as open source. That is available on the web. The address is www.keystoneframework.org. I'll put that on the Lightning Talks page when we've got to that as well. The license is LGPL. Therefore, derivatives of the framework, if that ever happens, could be republished. But also, you have the capacity. But that was the condition that we chose for the publishing of this under my employer. All right, thank you very much.
Can someone else find me?
Hello.
Okay. Can someone else seriously find me?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have to wait and see. If you'd like to find out, please see me afterwards. Okay, start me.
Getting laid. GNOME people, we have this phrase that we use every now and then when we're talking about what our ideals are in terms of what we're trying to achieve with GNOME. Software freedom is not just for geeks. Once upon a time, there was an idea called WIMP, which is Windows, icons, oh, open office, you little slobby piece of crap. Icons, menus, pointers. And a little while ago, I coined a term called Topaz to kind of summarize some of the ideas of where GNOME is headed, so that we stop talking about 3.0. Those were people, events, documents, conversations, and getting laid. Getting laid? So it turns out that we've spent quite a lot of time on a lot of these things. We've been doing a lot of work on people, things like the Soylent project, reflecting people in the user interface, presence, things like telepathy are helping a lot with that. Events, where all sorts of things within evolution and managing events. Documents, where we're doing things like all of the recent document support and making sure documents are available to local networks, all these kinds of things. So we're integrating all of these kinds of things to make these easy to use. Conversations, telepathy, excellent example. But we haven't really done a heck of a lot on the getting laid problem. This is a very brief talk about the issues that I have with couple-aware software. I was using Flickr a little while ago, and I decided that I wanted to become a Flickr Pro user, and then realized that I would be a Flickr Pro, but Pia would not be a Flickr Pro. And so she'd have all of these upload limits and stuff, and yet I wouldn't. So what I really wanted was a Jeff and Pia Flickr account so that we could both upload our photos and they'd be recognized as, you know, different people within Flickr, but we could pay for our own access. And I would be willing to pay a couple of extra dollars a year for having a couple's account. But Flickr doesn't do that. Facebook almost does this. It gives you the option to set someone as you're in a relationship status. So when you're off single and off, it's complicated. You can be, you know, married, engaged, girlfriend, whatever like that. So Pia and I are able to refer to each other as married on Facebook, and thankfully both of us have. And that status hasn't changed in since I last looked at Facebook. I noticed that there's a new a search system for people called Spock. You can actually tag people with what your relationship is. So, you know, in the future, rather than saying, will you marry me, you just tag someone wife and they say yes or no to that, whether that tag is accurate. So Flickr doesn't deal with it all. Facebook almost deals with it, but doesn't provide anything really awesome for me to do it. What do we have in GNOME? Well, we've got all of this cool data that is very much single-focused. It's my data, but I can't make my F-spot stuff available to Pia. I can't have like a set of photos or a set of music that's optimized for both of us to access it. Now, I'm a geek, so I can set up, you know, my NFS server or my Samba server, and we have, you know, a war group, and, you know, at some point when we spawn a new thread, we'll be able to put that person in the war group and all that kind of stuff. I can do that, but, you know, that's not what we want to give our users. Software freedom is not just for geeks, so we want to make it so that it's couple-aware. But the great thing about that is that you can turn from couple-aware into family-aware, into friends-aware, and all this kind of stuff, and build social networking into GNOME through a clear objective, which is getting laid. So if you don't want to do this for me, and if you're single and don't have commitments, do it for Peel. But if you're not single and you have a family, think about what the opportunity there is for social networking within the desktop, within everything that we work with every day, and the opportunity that we have to share stuff with our family members, with our spouses, all that kind of stuff in the desktop. Thank you very much. And I believe we have one more, unless someone's been updated while my computer was no longer displaying stuff. This is my computer. I rebooted and everything was okay. Do you know what that says about X? That when I rebooted, everything was okay? Rockin'. Okay, so we have the Gangster X Posse on hand waving. They're going to talk to us about hand waving. So, a 5-minute lesson on Semaphore by the Gangster X Posse. And then we've got Chrome after that. So, Gangster X Posse. You're working on the Gangster X Posse. Another one. Okay. So I'll reload. I don't think there's anything new. No, there's nothing new. Add more if you want to do a lightning talk, if you want to respond to previous lightning talks, if you want to tell people how cracked they were in their talks earlier today, no worries. You can do 5 minutes on telling people how cracked they are. But for now, Gangster X Posse. I was just about to say. One person does not make a posse.
Unless he's really awesome.
Okay. Keith, get up here. Help Daniel.
Look, my bad. I roll 50 dice.
Hold these.
Sure.
I will begin your time when you're ready to rock.
What's our plan?
Miss other bong hits in the hood.
I've got my own presentation.
Do you want to be
happy? I'm on
the list. Oh, that's going to go next? Yeah, that's on? Yeah. But you don't need anything yet?
No.
What's Midori?
It's crap browser. Keep going!
Sweet. Alright, Layer X. Yay. We're doing a bunch of new and cool stuff or something.
Render 1.3. Go. Render 1.3. Let's see, in Render 1.3, we have
Shutter.
A... What? Oh, that's right. Where's Ajax? Is he out heavily drinking? Yes, he's heavily drinking while writing his talk. Let's see, Render 1.3, we're adding a couple of things to the render protocol that may be relevant. One of the key things for GNOME is that we're adding a whole bunch of standard properties so that a GNOME Grander application, such a great name, Grander, can actually tell what's going on the screen. So for instance, we'll be able to tell what kind of connectors you have on the back of your laptop. We're going to standardize the names of those. We're going to be able to tell, isn't that cool? A standard way of getting the EDID properties, a standard way of getting, what other stuff is in the list of Grander? DPMS events, right, per screen DPMS control. So now you can tell each monitor to go to sleep independently. So when you want to, you know, turn off the projector and that kind of stuff. There's already per screen DPI. Yeah, we're way ahead of you. And a bunch of other very modest fixes. Oh, one of the things I'm hoping to get into Render 1.3 is per output projector transformation. So you can do screen scaling per screen, per monitor. So you can have a large version and a small version, which seems like it might be useful. I don't know. I have a particular customer who needs that, but let's see. GPU objects. We're also hoping to get that into Render 1.3. We're hoping to be able to actually expose the concept that you have multiple GPUs in your server so that we can get back the functionality that we lost with Zinorama Classic Mode. So we're trying to get back to 1998 or something.
That's not too bad. Usually we're in the 80s.
I know.
Progress.
This 80s family. We're here. It's your turn.
How's XKB doing?
Badly. I don't know. I don't have anything clever to say. I've just been hunting memory leaks and it sucks. I still haven't found it.
Input. What's happening with input?
Yeah, Peter is happening with input.
Go to okay, Peter's on like Thursday because it's going to be really awesome.
Thank you. I'm basically GNOME's worst nightmare. If you look at the user interfaces we have it now, it's built for one cursor and for one keyboard. What MPX does, which will be in X in about two releases or something like that, is you will have N cursors and N keyboard foci. So if you plug in 10 mice and 10 keyboards, you will be able to use all 10 at the same time on the same screen. And now, think about how that applies to that interface. Everything breaks down because how do you make a button work if three people can click on it at the same time? who is actually getting a click? How do you make a radio button work? If I select option A, Keith selects option B, what do you actually display? Is A selected or is B selected? Or have I selected A and you selected B? It depends on the application. Windows, same thing. Like, how do you pop-up menus? Drop-down menus. How do you think 10 people can work with drop-down menus at the same time? You don't have large enough screens to do that. So just think of the GIMP with its nested
pop-up menus, for example, doesn't work for more than one user. And think of bimanual interaction. So you have two mice, and you actually do stuff like that, like rotating an object with two mice or whatever other devices you have. So the whole interface basically just breaks down. Nothing actually breaks, but the concept breaks down. So start thinking about how we can actually change that.
When's your talk?
Thursday at 2:30 somewhere.
Go to it because the demos are sweet.
The man can operate three mice simultaneously.
He has two hands. Use your imagination.
So Carl Wirth and I will be talking tomorrow about how we've made 2D performance super fast with the Intel 965 driver. So your Firefox will no longer, you know, take seconds to render pages and that sort of thing. But we've also been doing a lot of work in the 3D driver, adding new features, in particular frame buffer objects, which let you now render to things and then render from things instead of only rendering to things or only rendering from things. So this is pretty exciting for GStreamer and that sort of stuff, where you might want to have different levels of transformations happening to objects. I believe David Schlieff is already working on this. And then there's also work going on with XBMC to do this sort of optimized hardware accelerated path entirely using the custom hardware for doing media transformations from just playing the movie entirely in the graphics chip instead of doing a bunch of CPU processing for the decode.
You guys are actually done, sorry, I forgot to give you a 4-minute warning.
Yep.
We're done. Well, please come more fun. Yeah.
Enjoy. Thank you.
Keith on Chrome.
I didn't have enough to do last week, so I wrote a new toolkit.
Ready to go?
Yeah, I'm going. See, look. Okay. So, obviously the most important questions, why did I write another toolkit? I think the most relevant piece of relevant questions asked here is there anything useful that I learned while writing this toolkit last week? And then I want to show some demos, because demos are always cool. Okay. Where did Chrome come from? Well, I have this language called Nickel. Has anybody ever heard of my language, Nickel? Look at that, my two Nickel users.
It's a calculator.
No, it's not. It's a floor wax. So it's a strongly typed interpretive language that I use for a lot of application prototyping. In any case, and then I have this drawing library that I helped Carl start a long, long time ago, and then Carl did all the work, and then Bedad did all the work after that. And I wanted to glue them together so that I could draw stuff on the screen from my Nickel applications, because I like to be able to draw graphs and all kinds of cool stuff. So I glued them together into a binding called Cairo 5C. It's an American pun. The Nickel is the 5-cent coin, as you may know. Yeah, or it's the fifth generation of a C-like language. Choose your poison. But I wanted to write applications in it, and writing applications is a lot easier with a toolkit. How many of you have written an application in Xlib? Yeah. How many people have not done that? Yeah. Plus, I haven't written a toolkit for a couple of years. It seemed like time to do it again. Okay, so useful ideas. Now, the one thing that GNOME has figured out is that windows are bad and that you paint everything on a single canvas. So the Cairo 5C binding is not a low-level binding to Xlib. It's just a binding to Cairo. When you create a Cairo Xlib surface, you get a window. And all the details about how that window is managed are hidden from your Nickel application. It's double buffered, it automatically updates when you paint, things are copied. It has the ability to smoothly double buffer stuff, and I'll show that in a demonstration here. Input is all managed for you, you just get a nice little sanitized input stream. And the whole thing is double buffered, so when you render to the window, it goes to the back buffer. Now, by default, the little thing in the background running back there will automatically update the screen whenever you paint to the back buffer. So if you're typing in interactive mode, you can draw lines, stuff appears on the screen, it looks like it's not double buffered. But then you can say, oh, don't update the screen for a while. Draw, 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 update the screen. That's double buffering. Blink. So you get the advantages of immediate mode programming, and you don't need to think about double buffering. But if you want to take advantage of it, you can turn off the updates and then turn them back on, and you get double buffering. One of the cool things that I did discover is that subtyping instead of subclassing, so Nickel is not an object-oriented language. It's a strongly typed imperative language without objects. So all it has is subtyping. But when you subtype a structure, you add members to the structure. So I can do subtyping. I can take my, you know, my widget class and add a bunch of new members to that, and it's still a widget, and it's also this new thing. And because Nickel has symmetrical super subtype type compatibility, you could pass these objects around and receive them, and there's no casts. So I'm getting strong type checking to make sure that I'm passing the right object types around. Very nice advantage. Something nicer than, say, C offers. One of the nice, obvious benefits of that is you can concatenate multiple structures together, as many as you want. And so you can have as many super types as you want. And so you can have the behavior of a widget, and you can have the behavior of a container for the purposes of layout. Or you could have the behavior of a contain, something that lives inside a container, and a container. So you could do all kinds of crazy subtyping. One of the things that I did do is layout hierarchy doesn't require a hierarchy of widgets. So the widgets themselves, the layout objects are not widgets. The layout objects are just containers. They don't do... Am I done?
You've got half a minute left.
Okay. I show a demo. So this is a program that I wrote in my toolkit. And as you can see, when you resize it, all of the painting is, the whole game gets painted correctly every time. There's no partial painting. All the layout happens. All the widgets are painted synchronously. And you can do animation with it, you know. And that's all nicely double buffered. You're not seeing any artifacts on the screen. And in fact, the whole screen is painted every frame. Everything on the screen gets painted every frame. I have a cute little timer widget. So here we have the board acting as a geometry manager.
Quick call, who wants to give Keith 2 more minutes?
Okay. Oh, thank you. So, and in fact, the little gray circle right here is actually a separate widget from the board. So the game board is now a container widget, and it contains this single widget. It doesn't support multiple containees, but it has one little contained item inside it, and that it's managing the geometry of that. As it gets resized, then the geometry and size of that sub-widget also get managed, all automatically. And that was actually fairly easy to do. Anybody want to see code examples? Oh, right, there's no clipping. Watch this. Whee! Oh, look there. It goes over the other widgets. The game is constraining it to the board just because it's a little more convenient that way. But, and then you can throw these things around. They're fun. And, let's see, we'll quit that. So here's the little timer widget. So it is a button, because you can click it, and then it has some other stuff. It has the amount of time remaining, that kind of stuff. And then ticking is actually run in a separate thread, and it just sleeps for a while and redraws itself. That's all it does. It just says sleep, and then every once in a while it says, oh, please draw yourself. So it doesn't do anything fancy. When you start the widget ticking, it kills anybody else, any thread which is currently ticking the widget, and then it just forks off another thread to start the ticking. And that's all it has to do. Oh, it has a gratuitous redraw. Look, we're going to fix the code. Yeah, that's always good to do. And let's see, what other cool stuff does it do? Oh, right, the geometry. Here's how the geometry management works. You have three callbacks in your widget that generate two of them generate paths, and one of them actually does the rendering. So you can call a function that says, please give me your natural size. What size would you like to be? So for an object with text in it, like a little label widget, it knows what size it wants to be. This thing says, I don't really care what size I am. One by one, you know, give me any size, I don't care. And then there's another function that says, okay, at your current geometry size, what's a bounding box for you? You know, give me some idea about how big the bounding box of what hit detection you want to do. No, not a bounding box, it actually constructs a path. Give me a path for hit detection. And when the mouse enters that path, you'll be inside the widget. So it's purely path-based. There's no rectangular limits at all. Now, the toolkit has optimizations to take the bounding box of that so that it can do some short-circuiting on actual path detection, because Cairo's point-in path is not the speediest implementation in the world. But it's, you know, it's surprisingly usable. And then you just have a draw callback, and you're given a Cairo context, and you're given the widget, and you say, please draw yourself. Now, you aren't given any geometric constraints. You're just given a geometric, this would be a nice limit for you to live within. So here you have, here's the size that I want you to be, about width by height. And in fact, that geometry even contains where you are within the window in an absolute sense. Again, no hierarchy. The widgets are placed in an absolute coordinate space in the outer level widget. And then it just draws itself using the transformation. So the Cairo object comes in pre-transformed, pre-offset to your location, but not pre-scaled. So really easy to draw. So that's the whole timer widget. Thank you, Jeff.
Who else is doing talks?
We have... I will refresh just again, but we've got one from Leonard.
And if anyone else wants to do one, you can put your lightning talk up on the page right now. You still can. So for now, we have Leonard. Did you need your laptop?
Yeah.
It does not exist in India and Pakistan, but it does exist everywhere else in the world.
Do you want me to start you off?
Redis wanted to quickly talk a little bit about Mangalassi. Mangalassi is some software I've read a while back.
Oh, thank you. Mangalassi is a software I read a while back, which is intended to be something like a replacement for something called Synergy or X2X, in case anyone knows that. It's useful if you, I mean, many of the developers have several machines on the desktop, like one laptop and one desktop, and maybe another desktop, and maybe even more desktops. And they have the problem that their desk doesn't even have enough space to put all the keyboards and mice on it. So what this is about is the ability to share mice and keyboards over the network, so that you can have all your machines and just a single keyboard, single mouse, or something like that. It's flexible enough to allow even different setups, like you have one mouse and one keyboard for every single machine, then you can use them all together, like merging all those devices. So I read it a while back. Unfortunately, I didn't really have the time to hack on this much, but it's so cool what I actually got to that I wanted to show it here. So this is a screenshot how it actually looks. There's not much to see here because there's only one side of the session. This is actually made up of two of my machines, like this laptop and my desktop. If you look here, you see an on-screen display which tells you, okay, this screen is currently being controlled by a different desktop, like which is to the right of this one, which this nice arrow shows. So actually, you have to think that there's another machine to the right of this screen, which has the mouse and the keyboard attached. And if you move the mouse on that screen and to the left, then it will warp to this one, and you can control this one. The difference between this and X2X and Synergy is that it is fully peer-to-peer. On Synergy, you have to configure one machine as a server and the others as clients. Mangalassi is fully peer-to-peer. They just use Avahi to publish that they are on the network, and they also use Avahi to find other machines on the network. And then they try to remember, okay, I've already been connected to that one, and then they join the session. The whole idea is that, I mean, I take my laptop with me. My desktop is always on my desk, so I want this to be dynamic. Like, I just need to plug on my laptop, and I should be able to use mouse and keyboard at the same time from both machines. And it shouldn't really matter which one I have powered on and which one I don't. I want this totally dynamic. So this stuff is fully peer-to-peer. Then what I do as well is share the clipboard, which is also much better than X2X or Synergy did, because X2X and Synergy only share the one of the selections, while X has a lot of more, and they only do text. The code I have here in Mangalassi actually shares the whole clipboard. This is actually exceptionally useful because you can run GIMP on one of the screens and GIMP on the other screen, and then you can copy from one screen to the other stream, and it just works. You don't have to think about that all across the network. What else do I provide? I read it all up in a blog story I posted a while back, so if you're interested, try to find this blog story. It doesn't require you to open X11 up for the network like X2X does. The current status is all this. I coded most of the interesting part. The uninteresting part, like configuring sessions, like which desktop is left, which desktop is right, I have not done. So it's mostly the user interface stuff I didn't do. The what's at the core is perfectly well done. What else could I say? Then the implementation actually has is not optimal because X11 is rather limited, but thanks to the work of Herrn Hotterer, this is going to change, and we will then be able to even have a separate mouse pointer for each machine in the session. Like you have all your six machines on your desk, and everyone has a single mouse cursor, and you can move all the mouse cursors of all the machines onto the same screen and can move everything independently. So it kind of extends what Herr Hutterer here is doing with his multi-input X stuff to the network. And everything totally hub plugin. Yeah, and so I guess I could have gone on and on.
You're done.
And yeah. And we even have an icon, which looks like totally cool.